Our next case this morning is number 073925, Lineback against Zerlino Materials. Mr. Brown.
Hey, please the court, counsel. My name is Bob Brown. I represent Zerlino Materials, who is the appellant and respondent in this case. We are here today because we've appealed the injunction issued by the District Court for the Southern District of Indiana against Zerlino Materials based upon a petition brought by the Regional Director for the National Labor Relations Board. The petition had been brought by the Regional Director to restrain or enjoin Zerlino from engaging in certain alleged unlawful unfair labor practices while the case was pending before the board, its administrative proceedings. I think it would be helpful if I would give the court some background relative to the argument. Zerlino started its operations in Indianapolis in October of 2005. Shortly thereafter, in January, its truck drivers decided to organize, and they voted to be represented by the Teamsters, Teamsters Local 716. Then in February, the company began to negotiate a first labor agreement with the Teamsters. During that period of time, the company also learned that it had been awarded a contract to supply concrete to the stadium project, the Lucas Oil Stadium project that was going on in Indianapolis. That was a significant project that involved supplying concrete to the new stadium for the Indianapolis Colts. In connection with that contract, Zerlino was required to sign what is called a project labor agreement, which meant that while Zerlino's employees were working on that project, specifically the stadium project, they were governed by this project labor agreement to which the Teamsters Local 716 was also a party. And the project labor agreement had more lucrative terms in terms of the truck drivers than did the common or regular pay practices and benefit practices of Zerlino. Zerlino began to service that contract through one of its plants located in the Indianapolis area. And when they needed concrete, they would dispatch one of their drivers in the normal course to the project. Later, after the project got started, the demands for the concrete became greater, and so Zerlino decided to erect what is often referred to as a portable plant at the job site. When it did so, then that concrete plant needed to be staffed with drivers, and so it selected four of its drivers to work at that facility when it operated. It didn't operate all the time, and so that was the method that they used. The Labor Board contended during the administrative proceeding and also during the proceeding before the district court that up until the time that the plant was erected, that the company had been not selecting those people that they knew as union organizers to take trips to the stadium project and thereby get the higher wage rate and the better benefits. The board alleged that as a violation. However, the board only alleged that as a violation for a specific short period of time. from February of 2006 till June of 2006 when the portable plant was erected. After that, while the company continued on occasion to regularly send trucks and concrete to the stadium project from this Kentucky Avenue plant, the board found that there was no discriminatory actions being taken, at least as they had alleged it. Then they also alleged that when the company constructed the plant, the portable plant at the job site, that it handpicked four drivers to work at that job site and ignored, again, union organizers who they claimed were better qualified for these positions and that they were more senior. Those are the two allegations, they also claimed that the company had violated the act before the court in that it had failed to negotiate the job classification of truck driver for the portable plant and had failed to negotiate the method by which it selected employees to work at the portable plant. The company took the position in that particular instance that portable plant, how employees were to be selected, and the job classification were covered exclusively by the project labor agreement that had been negotiated with the Teamsters, and therefore it answered all the questions as to what was to be done in that particular circumstance. So those, in essence, are the allegations that were before the court at the time that it issued the injunction. And in that regard, there was no allegation that the company had acted improperly with regard to bargaining its first contract with the Teamsters. There were no allegations that it had discriminated against any employees in connection with work that was being performed away from the project. And on that basis, the court issued the injunction.
On what basis? It was focused a lot on the plant by the stadium, wasn't it? The temporary plant.
Yes, it was focused on the.
And you mentioned that there. I don't know what the distinction was, but supposedly there was a certain test that everybody was going to take in order to see if they're qualified to work there.
Correct.
As opposed to just the seniority list or whatever you had.
Right. That is correct. But I guess the point I'm trying to make, Your Honor, is that by the time we got to talking about the injunction in June of 2007, the portable plant had been closed, and it had closed in February of 2007 when the greater need for the concrete had gone away and the project was winding down to the point that just occasional deliveries were needed. So our position is that as it relates to the injunctive action, that the situation was such that there was clearly an adequate remedy at law for any violation of the act that had occurred, that paying the differential was easily calculable in any of those situations, and therefore there was no need for injunctive relief under those circumstances. Additionally, the court was required to show, and the board was required to show, that there had been, or there was, irreparable injury. And again, with the practice that they were complaining about, particularly with the transfer of employees to the job site, that had occurred almost a year before, and had since ceased. And the transfer or the allegation of alleged providing the better job assignments to non-union adherents had ceased almost a year ago. Our position is that there's no basis in that particular instance for there to be any injunctive action, that those are two necessary requirements that have to be shown in order for injunctive relief under Section 10J to evolve, and neither were present in this case.
Was it legitimate to have a prospective injunction in this case because of the impact it has? Because that's one of the focuses that you object to, because it focused on bargaining and to continue whatever you want to call the bargaining that maybe wasn't really an issue, but that was part of the order.
Well, in our view, Your Honor, I think the court acted where it didn't have authority to act when it found that the company had bargained in bad faith and ordered that it bargain in good faith on the initial contract. And the reason I say that is there was no allegation before the court, there was no allegation before the board that this company had ever engaged in bad faith bargaining. And for the court to make that order under those circumstances, they were acting outside the purview of the petition that the court had been asked to act on, and as well as the National Labor Relations Act. There was absolutely no evidence in the record to deal with any issue with regard to bad faith bargaining of the initial contract. And so the board in its arguments and its briefs have emphasized their likelihood of success on the merits. And in this case, the administrative law judge dismissed one of their allegations. And as to the other one, it's the situation involving the portable plant. I find it just hard to imagine that whole scenario is not covered by the project labor agreement.
What's the status of all of this now before the board? Isn't there?
The administrative law judge has issued his decision,
and
that's been appealed by both the general counsel and us, and it's pending before the board at the present time.
So what happens when that comes down? What's the effect of this injunction?
The injunction then becomes moot once the board hands down its decision.
You're in your rebuttal, Thompson.
Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. We'll hear now from Ms. Compton.
May it please the Court, Counsel. My name is Casey Compton, and I represent the NLRB in this proceeding. We've heard this morning about how the district court issued a limited restrictive injunction that it found necessary to prevent the employer, Spirulino Materials, from further violating federal law, specifically for continuing to ignore the union during bargaining by making unilateral changes to employees' terms and conditions, and from further discriminating against its own employees for their union activity. Now, the employer's appeal of this limited injunction really raises two issues for this court to consider. Number one, was it error for the district court to find that the regional director had a strong likelihood of success before the board in the administrative case? And number two, did the court abuse its discretion in granting the limited injunction? And I would submit to this court that the answer to both of those issues is no, and that this court should affirm the limited injunction in place. Now, with regard to the first issue, the likelihood of success before the board, the district court correctly concluded, in our view, that the regional director has a strong likelihood of establishing before the board that the employer unilaterally created the portable plant driver position, the alternate backup driver position, and the criteria used to staff those positions for the 2006 stadium project without bargaining with the union. Indeed, Spirulino admits that it didn't bargain with the union over these new classifications. And subsequently, the ALJ in the administrative case found that it was a violation for the employer to refuse to bargain over those issues, specifically noting that changes to employee seniority, scheduling, vacancies, and transfers are mandatory subjects of bargaining between the employer and the union. Now, this court has routinely recognized that the ALJ is the board's first-level decision maker and thus provides a useful benchmark for which to gauge the director's likelihood of success before the board. The court should thus recognize, in this case, that the ALJ's decision bolsters the district court's finding that the director has a strong likelihood, and this court should also take judicial notice of the ALJ's decision.
Ms. Compton, counsel indicated that not only had the company sought review before the board, but that the NLRB had as well. What is the basis of the NLRB's seeking review?
Your Honor, the employer accepted to many allegations that the ALJ concluded, and the general counsel filed cross exceptions before the board, specifically with regard to what my opponent alluded to, this situation, the allegation involving the discrimination against the union supporters prior to the erection of the portable plant. There were really allegations involving two stages. Once the stadium project began, the employer was dispatching employees from the Kentucky Avenue facility. And there was an allegation that the employer was bypassing the three union leaders at that time. Then when the employer erected the portable plant, that's when it created these new job classifications, et cetera, and there is a separate allegation with regard to that. So the ALJ dismissed, the ALJ found that the general counsel had established a prima facie case with regard to that first time period, but then found that the employer had rebutted that prima facie case, and that's what the general counsel has accepted, has cross-accepted to with the board. But I would note with regard to this injunction, the effect of the discrimination is the same, regardless of when it occurred, whether it occurred prior to the portable plant or during the portable plant. And the remedy is the same with regard to both allegations.
Which is what?
Which is cease discriminating.
Well, where? Because this is one of the things that this plant is closed. You know, that project is done. I assume it's back to whatever it was before on the seniority progression, et cetera. Does that mean don't do it again or stop doing it now or what?
Well, Your Honor, at the time, the district court actually thought about this issue, and that is in the district court's opinion. And because at the time, the stadium project was beginning to wind down even at that point. And so the remedy here is to cease discriminating in job assignments. Because the district court found that even though the stadium project was nearing a close, it was just like any other project. The employer continues to make job assignments daily. It's also continuing to bargain with the union currently. So the situation is the same. The stadium project is over, but the employer's business is operating in the same way. It continues.
Isn't it operating with this seniority? And really none of these people have much seniority, do they?
Well, Your Honor,
when they took over the company, I got the impression, at least, that the seniors had like 5 or 6 months, and those less had 2 or 3 months.
Actually, Your Honor, I believe that the employer's brief is somewhat misleading with regard to that issue, because when the company took over operations in 2005. Of course, everyone starts out at the same seniority with regard to the employer. But the employer, Sperlino, took over operations from a company called American Concrete. And the issue of seniority really dates back to what their seniority under American Concrete was. And the three union leaders, for instance, had years of seniority with American Concrete.
Is that how they were then placed on the list?
Yes, sir. The seniority list just followed from the predisessor.
Is there some allegation that they're not doing that now, that stadium project is over?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I believe that the injunction has had its intended effect, and that the employer is complying with federal law at this point. But I would, with regard to the second issue which this court has raised, whether the district court's grant of an injunction was an abuse of discretion, particularly because the stadium project is now over, I would submit that the court applied the correct legal standard and looked at all of the necessary factors. First, importantly, the threat or risk of irreparable harm to the employee's union effort and the collective bargaining process. Now, the employer talked about, in its brief and here today, an adequate remedy of law. And that is, of course, one of the factors necessary for an injunction under Section 10J. But I believe that the employer, that argument is somewhat misleading. The purpose of Section 10J is not to compensate individual employees. The board can do that whenever the board order issues eventually. The purpose of 10J is to protect the party's bargaining process. And that's what's at stake here. The messages that the employer's actions sent out to the employees of this employer is, we're going to do whatever we want. We're going to create new job classifications when we want to. We're going to decide how to select people. And incidentally, we're going to discriminate against the union supporters who happen to be the entire employee complement of the union's bargaining team. So the employer is making these unilateral changes at the same time it's sitting across the table from the very people it's discriminating against. That sends a very powerful message to the employees of this employer. If the union can't even protect its own bargaining team from discrimination, it certainly can't protect the average employee. And it's notable to remember that these employees are bargaining their first contract. In the face of an anti-union campaign by the employer, the employees nonetheless voted yes to unionize. They exercised their free choice under the act. Now they are still bargaining for an initial contract over 2 years later. This court has recognized that employees in that position are particularly vulnerable to these types of messages from the employer. And the district court found it necessary to issue an injunction to help erase those messages, to indeed restore the status quo. Now, the status quo is not the physical presence of the portable plant. The status quo in this case is the equality of the two parties at the table. When they began bargaining in 06, in the beginning of 2006, the parties had a clean slate. They were presumably equal sitting across the table. Now, 2 years later, the employer has sent the message that it's going to do whatever it wants, it's going to choose whomever it wants, and that sends a powerful message. And as a result, the employer's bargaining power has risen and the union's bargaining power has decreased. In fact, the district court, in its evidentiary hearing, heard evidence that employee disaffection has already begun. There was testimony that employees are no longer attending union meetings or that there has been a decline in attendance. Employees have expressed that they're worried they will get fired every time something happens. Employees are blaming the union for failing to protect them against the employer's discrimination, and that they believe the company is winning and that the union could be voted out. Now, this is in the record. Employees are already expressing this fear. So clearly, the employer's messages have had their intended effect. So the district court in this case recognized that risk of irreparable harm and felt that an injunction was necessary, and at the same time found absolutely no harm to the company. The company is not made to do anything except follow the law in this case, which it has to do in any event. The court issued a very narrow cease and desist order. Now, my opponent makes a little bit of an argument about the district court's order to bargain in good faith. Now, it's true that this is not a general bad faith bargaining case in the sense of a traditional surface bargaining case. However, unilateral changes are a form of bad faith bargaining, and they have directly affected the bargaining process between these two parties. Instead of being able to effectively bargain a first contract, the union has had to fight these unilateral changes with regard to the company. It has to file charges with the board, filed a brief with this court. That's time and effort and energy that has gone away from bargaining a first contract. So indeed, unilateral changes are a form of bad faith bargaining, and the remedy for such a violation is to bargain in good faith. That is exactly what the board order will likely say, and the district court was certainly correct to issue an order that was in line with what the board will order eventually.
No, I want to just ask parenthetically here, before the argument, you all sent some sort of a pending settlement or something, whatever, but I, for one, would really like you to keep the court informed on that,
mm-hmm.
so we don't dig into this thing unnecessarily.
Yes, sir. It's my understanding that the parties are continuing to bargain, as indeed they have. I don't think that they've reached an agreement. I mean, the board is sort of out of the process and is at this point a spectator in terms of what the parties are doing at the table. It's our understanding that they have continued to bargain, but they have not reached a resolution yet. But we would certainly, I assume that the employer would certainly notify this court and withdraw its appeal if the parties reach a contract. So as noted through that, however, we can see that the district court's injunction has indeed had its intended effect. The ULPs have ceased. The employer is no longer violating the act under this injunction, and the parties are indeed bargaining for a first contract and will hopefully reach one soon. So if this court lifts the injunction, the message to those employees is, in fact, that the employer can violate the law again, as the district court found the potential that it had already. So I would urge this court to find that the company has not come even close to showing that the district court's order of an injunction was an abuse of discretion, and I would urge this court to affirm.
As far as the overbreadth issue, though, you think it's confined to the issue of the unilateral changes? As far as, instead of just some sort of a general good faith bargaining issue?
Well, I think that the board, if I may answer your question, Your Honor, the board's traditional order for a unilateral change violation is to cease making unilateral changes in violation of Section 85 of the Act. And the flip side to that is to bargain in good faith. I mean, unilateral changes is a form of bad faith bargaining. So I think what the district court was doing was just putting in, you know, what the board would note anyway. If you're to cease and desist from bargaining in bad faith, it means that you need to actually bargain in good faith. And so I think that's all that the district court did here, and I think that's in line with what the board normally does. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Compton. How much time does Mr. Brown have? Sir, you have 2 minutes.
I'll be brief. I think the general counsel or the board has made the point that I've been trying to make, and that is that the unilateral changes that we're talking about, which are two, relate solely to the project labor agreement and none of the other bargaining that's been going on between the company and the union. Those two changes that they claim were changes were, number one, that we created a job classification of truck driver for the portable plant, and number two, that we devised a method to select employees to work at the portable plant. Those are the only two issues that they claim are unilateral changes. And if you look at the project labor agreement, as we pointed out in the brief, the project labor agreement says for this project, when working at the Lucas Oil Stadium, we can pick whoever we want to do the truck driver job. And seniority is not a factor. And so that's all we're talking about in this whole situation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Indeed, our thanks to both Mr. Brown and Ms. Compton. The case will be taken under advisement.